today we are talking about trade shows. And we'll have some dinging if people join, but we won't worry too much about that. Again, if you're in the paid version of this course, you'll be getting a recording. So if you join us late, don't worry about it. You'll be getting a recording in your package. So today we're talking about trade show success. This has been a really popular topic. We did this once in 2011, about halfway through the year. This is an updated version of that course. We've added a lot to it, given what we've learned between then and now, and also some changes in the market that we've seen between then and now. So if you're joining us and this is the second time you've seen the trade show course, you'll be seeing a lot of changes to this, and you're very welcome to jump in if you know some of the answers, you know, either in the chat window or jump on the line. So we'll go ahead and get started. First of all, this is what everybody's afraid of. Trade show disasters. Everybody's had at least one. If you've ever done a trade show, you've had at least one minor disaster of some sort or another. But just to give you some examples of some of the things that can go wrong, John, I think you had a couple.
Yeah. We were at a particular trade show. I'll use us as an example.
It's always good to use yourself.
Paula was speaking at this one as well, and I was supporting her by handing out information and so forth. And a gentleman came up to me and said, I need to talk to you right now. We want to engage with you guys, etc. And I said, just a moment. And I finished working with Paul. And I said, you know what? Our booth is number 1456. It's right down the aisle here. Just going down, we have somebody there to take care of you. And he was rather insistent. I said, I can't leave while I'm supporting the speaker. So he went down there, and they all got excited, and, you know, things are working, we thought. And as of, and this is over a year ago, they still haven't signed a contract with us. So the point is, no matter how excited somebody thinks they may be at a trade show, make sure your booth is manned while you're out speaking or doing other things so that you can point them in the right direction. If you have time, fine, go talk with them. But otherwise, don't spoil what you're doing.
Exactly. I think it sends really the wrong message if you drop everything for one potential client, even if they are a fairly big fish. And this one was, you know, so we were excited about that. But it's happened to a lot of folks that we poached as well, you know, where someone approaches them at a trade show and says, you know, we only have a couple of hours. We've got a project that we're really interested in having you work on. You know, can you spend some time with us? They end up leaving their booth unattended in some cases, or leaving it a skeleton crew, or missing some events that they should be attending. You know, our kind of rule of thumb is never spend more than an hour with anybody at a trade show. That's not why you're there, unless you're going to dinner with folks, and then, you know, those can last 2-3 hours, however late into the night they go. But especially during trade show hours, you're there to, it's a numbers game. You know, you're there to meet a lot of people. And you can't put all your eggs in one basket, no matter how good a prospect might look. So that's one disaster. Another disaster is, you know, you can have a, we're often dependent on one printer. You know, most trade shows have a particular printer that they use for their trade show publications and other kinds of things. Something could come out badly through either, you know, by you setting it up wrong, or by the printer printing it wrong, or the print run getting out of hand, the paper jamming, there being a streak of white down the middle of your ad, whatever it is. All I can say about that is make sure you double check your proof. Do everything you can on your end to make sure that everything is fine, and don't rely too much on any one advertisement. You know, we'd rather see you buy 2 ads on subsequent days in a publication, or, you know, something along those lines, so that if one of them gets messed up, you've got another one. And, you know, again, those printers are rushed for time, and all kinds of weird things can happen.
Yeah, and the other thing is that those guys they don't show you proof anymore.
No.
So
it's all
you spend a day.
Nowadays.
you send it in and you get what you get. And you don't really know. In fact, even if you have them set it up, they don't send you a proof, so you get what you get.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, that's, those are some things that you can avoid with trade show disasters, and how to not stress yourself out too much and, you know, not have a problem. But again, if a disaster happens, and it will happen to you if you've done more than a couple of trade shows, you've had disasters. All you can do is keep smiling, keep showing up at your booth, keep doing what you're doing, let it go. You know, it's too late to worry about it by the time the trade show starts. So just let it go. Don't let it ruin your day. Don't let it ruin your week, because then it will do more damage than if you just ignore it, laugh about it, say, yeah, our ad looks kind of funny. Got a big white streak down the middle of it, or, you know, whatever the situation is.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. So now let's talk about trade show success. You know, what is success? How do you build that bridge to make sure that your trade show is going to actually work? And there's a lot of things that you can do there. The first thing that you need to do is select the best trade shows. And if you've got our printed workbook for this course, there's a list from page from page 2 to about page 9, which is about 200 trade shows. And those are all aviation related. They're all over the world. You know, there's just a few logos on this page. I could have covered this with, you know, hundreds of them. You know, there's a lot of organizations that do them. There are some that are focused on a particular country or a particular aspect of aviation. Look over that list and don't just assume, okay, these are the two shows that we do every year, because these are the two shows that we've always done every year. It may be that there's a show that is less expensive for you, that'll be a better market, because, you know, maybe it won't be as huge, but it'll be more focused on your area of aviation. Any thoughts on that, John? We've been to small shows and big shows, and they both have their advantages.
You could go to trade shows all year long. Mm-hmm. So you need to actually do some thoughtful evaluation, because you need to go where your clients are most probably going to be.
Mm-hmm. There are some aviation companies that do nothing but trade shows, and they go to, you know, one every week. And that is a legitimate strategy, depending on your product or service and the demographics you're trying to reach. Some people do one show a year. You know, everybody else is somewhere in between those two extremes. So choose what best works for you. Preparing for the event. These are the three things that you need to do in a trade show, and these are the things that you need to have a plan for. One is to attract the right people. Two is to get them involved with your product. And three is to get permission to contact them later. And the best outcome of one of these aviation trade shows, I know there are some people that sell things over the counter. Usually those are, you know, like the little wooden models. There's somebody that does really good sales at some of the shows selling those. There's someone that sells toy helicopters, things like that. But if you are selling something that is valued at over $500, as an example, you're not going to make any over-the-counter sales at these trade shows without doing some real serious planning. Most of us use trade shows for prospecting. So our objective from that trade show is to have as many warm prospects, warm, highly qualified prospects as we possibly can, who are already interested and we've started a relationship with them. And that's the ideal outcome. So you find those three activities, everything else falls into place. A lot of people have too high of expectations of trade shows. I like to say that trade shows are like speed dating. You know, you meet somebody for 10 minutes. You're not in a situation where you can decide whether or not it's appropriate to get into a long-term relationship or a multi-$1,000 contract or anything along those lines. But at least you can put a face together with a name, you can get a sense for where they're coming from, and you can get a general idea of their interest. Any thoughts on that, John?
No, looks like it's pretty close.
Exactly. Do you agree with the analogy?
Oh, yes.
Okay. I've never done speed dating, but I've had friends who have, and they tell me that that's what it's like, you know, basically 10 minutes of they try to pour as much information on you as they possibly can. So, you know, basically all you're looking for is a feeling and a beginning of a relationship and perhaps one or two facts. So attracting the right people. This is the first of those three dots that we were looking at, the three activities that we need to do. To attract the right people, here are some things that you can do. You can get a list and send materials ahead of time. Most of the trade shows will provide you with a list of exhibitors or even a list of registrants. If you can send a postcard ahead of time and say, plan to see us in this booth, and here's a good reason why you should do that, either a contest or a demonstration or a seminar or whatever you can do. Find a way to visually demonstrate your product or service and to have an attractive booth that is suited to your objective. And we're going to be talking about all three of those things in a lot more detail, but those are the important points there for attracting the right people. Invitations. You know, these are really important because people get overwhelmed at trade shows, and often they will want to show up with a list of people that they want to see. They'll even take a map of the trade show, and people that have invited them or people that they've received something from and they have a reason to want to go see them, they will mark those on their map. So they'll have kind of a plan, so they're not just kind of wandering around lost in that big exhibit hall. Contests and games. There are all kinds of things that you can do as far as contests and games. There's scratch-off cards, you know, where they have to come to your booth and scratch something off and see if it matches the code at your booth. There are raffles that you can do. There's, you know, other games that you can play with people in your booth just to get them over there and get them interacting with you. A lot of them are good. The best ones are ones that are connected with your product or service in some way. So, you know, rather than just simply giving away an iPad, which is, seems to be the default thing in trade shows, you want to give something that is, you know, maybe an accessory to your product. You know, if you're selling Cessna airplanes, you may want to give away a Cessna keychain, you know, something along those lines that, that really ties in with your product. This, I think, is a better idea if you can do it. Demo seminars and consultations. And again, you don't want to get tied up with any one person for more than if, you know, depending on the type of trade show and how busy it is and things like that, you may want to plan 10-minute sessions, 15-minute sessions, 20-minute sessions, probably not longer than that because people have a really short attention span while they're on their feet. And also, you know, people have a million things to do while they're at the trade show, so you can't really tie up their time for longer than that. If you can teach a good 5 or 10 minute session on how to solve a problem, as an example, and you publish a schedule ahead of time of the demos, seminars, consultations that you're going to be doing, you know, you can attract people to your booth in that way and get people standing out in the aisle. Everybody will look over there and say, wow, what are those people standing around for? And come over and want to talk to you, or at least catch the tail end, and then they'll catch the next one next time you do that same seminar. Entertainment. You know, again, there's lots of games that you can play, a lot of entertainers that you can hire who will do things at or near your booth to attract people. We've had excellent results from a magician that's worked with us on a couple of trade shows. Sean, you want to tell them about that?
Well, he was able to integrate the philosophy of the company and or sales, actually, into his card tricks and was quite good at attracting people. In fact, in one particular case, people, it's interesting, people just will not stop at a booth until you get one or two there. And mm-hmm. It got to the point where he actually sprayed a bunch of cards out in the aisle and made people pick them up and bring them over to him.
Exactly.
But it worked. And from that point on, we had the largest crowd around our booth for the entire trade show, and that particular trade show.
It's one of those things about kind of the herd mentality, I guess, of people. You know, you get a large group of people that are walking by your booth, and nobody will stop until one person is stopped there. Once you get one person even to slow down or stop, then everybody comes over to see what they're looking at. You know, it's almost like driving down the road and there's an accident by the side of the road. Everybody has to stop and look. So, you know, that's really what you need to do at your booth, is to give people a reason to slow down or stop and say, wow, what's going on over there? Special promotions. This is another way to get people to your booth. You can say, you know, you have to come to our booth and pick up a coded card. You know, this one is actually a World of Concrete example, but it was a good one, I thought, because it has their booth number. It has, you know, the details of it really nicely written out, what you get, what it's worth, what you have to do to get it, and so on. So, you know, and then it also to see our website for the complete range of our products. But I think this is a really great example of a card that you could tell people, you know, come by our booth to pick up a certificate for a particular special promotion. And the only way that they can get it is to stop by your booth at the trade show. That does a couple of things. Number one, it gets traffic to your booth, which is, again, what we want to do. And number two, it helps you track the return on investment for your trade show. Now, most of us in aviation have a really long sales cycle, you know, anywhere from 3 months to years, you know, depending on what it is, that what the product or service is. So, you know, if you can put together something that's a fairly low-cost, low-risk item with a special offer like this, it can really shorten that sales cycle and also make sure that you're able to track your results from all of the shows that you go to, figure out which ones are the best in a more scientific sort of a way. All right, so now let's talk about trade show booths. We're going to look at a whole bunch of pictures of trade show booths, and we're going to look for three things. These are the three criteria. And John, if you can type these into the chat window, that will probably help, because we're going to want to look at these while we're looking at the while we're looking at the pictures. Can you see what the product or service is? Does it invite people to interact? And will you remember it after the show? And you know, those three things, there are so many booths that we go by, you know, that we see at trade shows that are missing one or more of those things. And if you can't tell what the product or service is, if it doesn't look attractive, doesn't have some way for you to interact with it, and if you don't remember it after the show, you've really wasted a lot of opportunity there, and potentially a lot of money and a lot of time and effort. So we'll go ahead and look at those these booths and see how that works. All right. And that's going to go through them again just to make sure we remember. Okay, so Honda, this was from a couple of years ago. So number one, can you see what the product or service is?
Well, yeah, and on top of that, they had a really nice area for prospective clients to talk in right off as we look at this picture to the right. Yeah. They also had, rather than a magician, a device they used to attract people, and they put a schedule out as they, we are going to do this every 20 minutes through these hours.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the Honda robot, Osimo, go out and perform for, what, 15 minutes?
Yeah, maybe 15 minutes, something along those lines. Right. So, you know, can you see what the product or service is? Absolutely. Does it invite people to interact? Yes. In fact, they have this special area back here, this glassed-in place where you can go back and talk with a Honda rep. And will you remember it after the show? Absolutely. So I would say if you have absolutely no restrictions on your budget and no restrictions on your space or anything else, this is what you want to do. I think this is a really excellent example of what can be done given resources. Most of us don't have those kinds of resources, but, you know, just to start with the ideal, and then let's go down to the practical end of what can we do. All right, this is Maureen Giles. They do aircraft interior textiles and leather and that kind of thing. Actually, I should not have said that. I should have said, can you see what the product is? Now that I gave it away. Obviously, it's textiles. Does it invite people to interact? Yes, it does. I mean, they've got chairs. They've got things for you to feel. They really want to get your hands on the product. And will you remember it after the show? Probably only if you're in the market for interior textiles. But, you know, that's exactly the kind of people that they're going for. And this is a way to accomplish all three of those goals with a much smaller budget than Honda Jet. You know, these guys had a 10x10 booth. Honda had, I don't know how big it was. It was probably 100x100 or bigger. So, you know, you can accomplish all three of these objectives on a budget. Here's another one for floor coating. So can you see what the product or service is? And this is a challenge if you have a business name that doesn't reflect your product or service. So, you know, if you have a big headline here, obviously here it's floor coating. But let's say the name of this company was Acme. You know, you wouldn't necessarily be able to tell what they have. They, you know, their samples are fairly small. They have a nice friendly person here. They've got a nice area for interacting with clients. So they do all the rest of those things. And they have this nice big headline that says floor coating. But there are so many booths that we see where you cannot tell what the product or service is, especially if you're walking by or you're in a hurry or whatever the situation is. Savon Creations. Somebody's going to complain about my French pronunciation, I'm sure. But this is an interesting one because it's in the middle of the aisle. And, you know, there's no walls. So, you know, this is a, you know, people walk all the way around this one. So can you see what the product or service is?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah, you've got the logo, merchandise, and things like that. You know, again, she's got a name that doesn't really tell you anything until you get closer, but she's got such a visual display of her product that really makes up for that. Does it invite people to interact? I think it does because, you know, again, you can walk up to it from any side. She's got stuff at eye level and stuff at hand level so you can pick things up and feel them and so on. And will you remember it after the show? Probably only if you're in the market for those things. But, yeah, I think you will. The Airport Safety Store. John, you want to run through this one?
Well, it's a little busy, but at least you can see what the products are.
Mm-hmm.
And when you walk into the booth, you can pick up flashlights and other kinds of things and play with them. And even if you're not in the market on this particular thing, if you're in aviation at all and frequent airports, you will probably look and say, oh, he's got one of those, and look, there, that's how it's used.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll probably do remember it.
Right. And I think, you know, one of the things that he does really well is he makes use of some of the properties of his items. You know, obviously they're very, very visible. So he turns on all of his lights and makes sure those things are all, you know, you can see strobing from across the aisle. You know, so he really takes advantage of something unique about his product that makes them more visible and more obvious who he is, what he does, what he's selling. All right. VJS Lincoln. John, tell us about these guys.
Well, they build hangars,
mm-hmm.
custom hangars anywhere. They also do, they'll do anything. They'll put in an FBO, they'll put in a fuel dump, fuel farm. And the ramp, they will negotiate with the airport authority, whomever it takes. And it's their sales cycle is probably 3 or 4 years. But they do one outstanding job in the hangar, and you can see the one in the background there that they did for Hawker Beechcraft. And they have a very thorough process for which they go through. So, yes, you can see the product, and it invites people who are interested, and you will remember it after the show.
Absolutely. What you really can't see from the photograph is they also have this video in the background, you know, that really shows some of their construction products. Her project and show their process. I think that was really engaging, and so on. And these guys, their marketing is almost exclusively trade shows.
Yes.
You know, they don't do a whole lot of other marketing. So, you know, they're pros at all three of those things. White towel services. You know, we were walking by this booth, and these folks handed us a hot towel. Now, and if you're in a trade show, you know, the last thing that you expect is to be handed something hot and wet that smells nice. So, you know, I mean, that definitely gets your attention, gets your senses involved, and so on. So you really can't see from here, but, you know, they would walk out into the aisle and literally, put this in your hands. You know, even if people were a little bit resistant, it would overcome that resistance almost instantly. As soon as they handed them this lovely little wet towel that smells like lavender or lemon or, you know, whatever scent they were displaying that day. But they have a little microwave, you can see in the background there, where they were heating up towels and just literally throwing them at people, practically throwing them at people. So yeah, you definitely see what the product or service is. You definitely invite people to interact, and you definitely will remember it after the show. So that's a great booth, and I think a great set of a great strategy that these guys were following to really get attention there. A&D Aerospace.
Now I've actually recommended these guys in the last month or two to a couple of folks with security concerns on aircraft. What they do, and they have all the stuff there, and they show you how it, where it is. They have pictures of how it works. But in general, what this stuff does is they mount micro cameras all over the airplane, and they have an embedded server in the aircraft with a secure Wi-Fi, and it records when you turn on the cameras. Like if you stop somewhere and are going to overnight or be gone for several hours in the aircraft, you turn this thing on, and it records any movement around wherever they're pointed, wheel wells, engine air inlets, nose cone, wing tips, and so forth. So if somebody's playing they shouldn't be, then you do an extra good pre-flight and you figure out who did what. They also have electronic programmable locks for all accesses to the aircraft, fuel caps, cabin, baggage compartments, etc. And they're actually keys, just like a real key, but the lock is programmable by individual and time of day. And if somebody tries to get in, and when they can't, it records it, shoots it to the Wi-Fi, and you, as the owner or whomever that has access to this thing, can look at your smartphone wherever you are and see what's going on. It's really good stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a lot about the product. How about the booth? Can you see what the product or service is from here? And again, they've got that challenge where the name of the company is not necessarily indicative of what they do. So how do
they actually have pictures on the computer screen there, and they have the equipment to the left of it, mm-hmm. of the guy, or to his right, my left.
Yeah.
And again, you probably wouldn't remember it if you weren't in the market.
Right.
But if you're in the market for that sort of stuff, you absolutely remember.
Absolutely. Exactly. You know, one thing that I would suggest, and, you know, here's some ways that could potentially improve this very good booth, would be to come up with a headline, you know, something along the lines of, you know, like I have one here, improve safety and security on your aircraft with A&D Aerospace IP cameras, okay? They could make that bigger and more obvious. I think it would attract more people to their booth. Also, you know, this kind of generic picture over on the left-hand side of the picture, you know, that could mean anything. I think they could improve that by being a lot more specific about what they do, more specific visually about what they do, and, you know, help attract people from across the room that maybe don't know that they're interested in this. Right. Okay, Aviation Information Services.
Yeah. Well, you can sort of see what the product. You can sort of see what the product is, but it's awfully busy.
Yeah.
And there's not much interaction. Although there's a computer there, you can go play with it. But you know, even if you sit down there, you know, what are you going to do?
Right.
Right.
And there, the headlines here: millennia, AIS, not terribly informative. You look here: web integration, Outlook, Lotus Notes integration, scheduling to dispatch. Okay, that's probably the most useful piece of information that you can see, and it's not the most prominent. You know, if I were to consult with someone with this situation, you have a challenge because you're selling software. But you need to come up with a benefit-centered headline of this is the problem that this solves, and you need to make that the most obvious visual thing about your booth. So what problem do you solve?
We don't have one here for the weather people.
We don't.
But they were.
Oh no, we don't.
But they were very simplistic. They're nothing but software as well. Mm-hmm. But when you're flying internationally, you can access up to the minute weather, no matter where you are, through their system, and they had a very simplistic approach to it.
Mm-hmm. Right. But you know, a couple things of this. That this booth did really well is it invites people to interact. It's got chairs facing this way. That it's got a computers that people can just sit down and play with the software. And this lady did a phenomenal job of really attracting people to the booth and overcoming those challenges. But I think the design of the booth is kind of working against her there. So
yeah,
she could set herself up, help herself out a little bit if she has some control over that. Duncan Aviation. And the reason I put this one in there is because you can see it from across the room. And can you see what the product or service is? Anybody that's familiar with the Duncan logo, and if you have a company that has been in business for as long as they have and is as familiar as they are, you can probably get away with this. The name Duncan Aviation is up there, but there's no indication of what they do. Everybody knows it anyway. So. Yeah, they can get away with being this visual and this, their intention is to let people know this is where the Duncan booth is, not this is why you need to go to the Duncan booth. So depending on where you are in your market cycle, if you're new, you wouldn't want to try this.
You heard people all over the place saying, well, we'll meet you over there by the Duncan booth.
Yeah, exactly. It becomes a landmark. Depending on where you are in your sales cycle, if you are new to the market, you really want to be benefit-centered and you really want to be clear about who you are and what you do. If you've been around forever and you're an Avfuel or a Duncan or a Cutter Aviation or anything along those lines, you can get away with becoming a landmark like McDonald's. You know, nobody has to say McDonald's hamburgers because you know what they have. Power Vamp. Do you remember these guys, John?
These guys were a couple of cards.
Yeah, they're a couple of stand-up comedians.
But they could talk. They knew their product well enough. They could talk about it in simplistic terms, explain to anybody that had half an idea of why those products exist and get along well.
Right.
And you can certainly see what the product is, and it does it, and it invites people to come in there and pull knobs and push switches and turn dials, and obviously we remembered after the show.
Exactly. Yeah, and that was partly the skill of these two gentlemen who were from England. I don't remember their names, but I should because they were fantastic.
Right?
And, the name of the company helps them out. Power Vamp, it has AMP in it, so, that helps. They say total support service. You could probably improve that by saying total power support service or, something that's a little more specific. But otherwise, I think it's a fantastic display, and it definitely meets all three of those criteria. Okay, now let's talk a little bit about how do you involve visitors with your product or service. Since the idea at a trade show is to introduce yourself and get your product or service into their hands engage with them in problem solving or whatever it is that you do. You really need to do something that actively gets them involved with the product. And we talked about the white towel folks, you know, that would actually go hand you a white towel while you're walking down the aisle. And that was fantastic. But if you have a product that lets you set up some kind of a demo, and in this case, this is a de-icing simulation. And John, you got to try this, didn't you?
Yes, I did. And let me tell you, it's not nearly as simple as it looks. I mean, even I tried it several times, and even after you think you have the hang of it, you use way too much fluid, and this stuff costs $1,000 a gallon or what, I don't know, it's very expensive. So you want to minimize the fluid usage, yet you want to make sure the aircraft is de-iced. And this simulation lets you make all kinds of mistakes and figure things out. It's very interactive.
Right. But definitely, you know, you can see what the product or service is. It invites people to interact. They had people lining up to play with this thing. And everyone will remember it after the show. So, yeah, it meets all three of those criteria. Booth talent, this is another way to help meet these criteria. This is our magician doing card tricks. And you can see there's a line of people lining up. And I have to tell you, this is at a military trade show, where they had shiny objects and exploding things and things that are much more interesting than what we were representing. The company we were working for was, their product is called Information Assurance. And I can't imagine a bigger yawner to present to a bunch of military people who would really much rather be off playing with the shiny objects than the exploding things. But, you know, we were able to get people to the booth and able to engage them and get them started asking questions about the product or service we were selling because of their interaction with Diamond Jim, who was our booth talent.
In this particular case,
no matter what product or service you have, there's a way to do this. Go ahead, John. I'm sorry.
In this particular case, I was speaking with the president of the firm, and there was sort of a balcony sort of area off to the to the right of this picture and back, probably 50, 60 yards. We were up there having coffee, and he said, "What do you notice about the floor?" And I said, I looked down there, and of course, I didn't know what he was talking about. He said, "Look at our booth." I did, and he said, "Yes." He said, "It has more people around it than any other booth on the floor." And this was about halfway through the first day. So we did good.
Right.
Diamond Jim did good.
Yeah. And people would talk about, you know, in the break areas and things like that, you have to go see this magician, you know. So they would actually send other people our way just to see that. And I think that's huge, drinking coffee in the background or something. In that picture. But I just noticed that. That's cool. Okay. So your goal here is to set up a later contact with somebody. Set an appointment. Offer to send them an ebook or a special report. Offer to send them an information packet. Offer to provide them with a consultation. You have to have a reason why you want to get in touch with them after the show. So you can collect all of the business cards you want. And, you know, a lot of people judge their success at a trade show by how big of a fishbowl of business cards did we get or how many leads did we get on our spreadsheet from those badge scanner things. That's not a great measure of success because what you want to measure your success by is appointments. To follow up. And really, those are qualified leads, not just people who are entering to win an iPad or, you know, throwing their card in your bowl just because it's the thing to do. You know, people who have a specific question that you're going to get back to them about or that you've set a specific action to follow up with them in the future is really what you want to do. And if you have your calendar there, in your booth, and I recommend a paper calendar for this reason, because electronic devices always have a way of going wrong, write an appointment. You know, if you're doing consultations or you're doing product demos or anything else, ask people, you know, when are you getting back to your office and can I touch base with you on Tuesday at 1 o'clock? Is that good for you? Or would you rather do Thursday at 9? And you give them a couple of choices and you set the appointment right there. You send them a reminder before they get home. You know, that really is the best way to qualify a lead and to make your time worth it. Okay. Most trade shows have public speaking venues and press opportunities, but right now we're talking about public speaking venues. So let's say that you are engaged to speak about a particular topic. The things that you want to do are, you know, make sure that you've got a brochure or something about your product or service available so that they can pick that up if they're interested. Now, they all have different guidelines, so you want to talk with the person who's hosting the event. You know, in some cases, especially if you're collecting a speaker's fee or something along those lines, and it's not appropriate to use that as a sales venue. You can't talk about your product or service, but you can start relationships, you know, based on that speaking event. You can also tell people, in most cases, it's kosher to say there's material about our products and services on the table in the back of the room. Or if you're interested in our products and services, talk to John, who's in the back of the room handing out brochures or something along those lines. Other things you want to do if you're public speaking is have someone take a video, because that is great material for your blog or your website. Video is huge for search engine optimization, and it also is huge for building credibility. If people can see, you know, you were a speaker at this particular event, you know, then suddenly they see you differently than if they don't know that about you. And the other thing is you want to write a press release and say, we're going to be here at this time speaking on this topic. And, you know, sometimes the local press or anyone else will send a reporter or send a photographer. Press opportunities, you want to get to know reporters beforehand. How do you go about doing that? You read the magazine. Read all of the flight magazines and look at who is reporting on the show. Whoever reported on the show last year is probably going to be reporting on the show this year, or at least we'll know who is. And you can give them a call. You know, if you follow their articles, if you've commented on them on a fairly regular basis, you've spent the time building a relationship, you can give them a call and say, are you going to be at the show, or who from your organization is going to be there?
And how are they going to receive these calls? Happily?
Only if you have been helpful to them in the past.
So, and if you don't know them?
Sorry?
And if you don't know them, is this your first time?
If you don't know them, then probably the best solution is to get to know them beforehand. Look at what they write. Look at what their editorial calendar is for the magazine. You can get that from the advertising section, and you can see what's going to be written on when. And you can see, you know, for example, if you know this person always writes about Piper, you know, that person is probably going to be the person writing the article in April about Piper. And you know they're probably going to be at that show. If you want to start a relationship with them, do it on social media. Be their friend. Comment on their posts. You know, help them when they ask for help. There's a program called HARO, Help a Reporter Out. And I'd recommend that anybody in marketing subscribe to that service, because you get these little daily memos of reporters asking for help on stories. And if you respond to some of those, you can build relationships with those reporters. Did that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Second thing is do something newsworthy. Now, a lot of the big companies will time their big transactions to occur at the show, and you know, you can see people handing somebody this enormous check, you know, at the show, because they intend to have this visual demonstration of this is what's going on, and they want to do that where there are lots of reporters around waiting for a story. You can do the same thing. If you launch a new product, you can announce it at the show. You know, if you do something newsworthy, if you've added new people to your organization in the last year, you can introduce them at the show. You know, a lot of times they'll do press conferences and things like that where you can announce anything that's newsworthy. If you've had a service project, built a Habitat for Humanity house, you know, anything along those lines, if it's newsworthy, you want to do that. And most shows have a venue for scheduling press conferences, so take advantage of that. Prepare press kits. What a press kit includes, you can do electronic ones that have a little USB card, or, you know, those little USB drives, or you can do them on a CD where you have the soft copy of your press release and high resolution photographs, maybe some video, anything that a reporter might need to do a story. The easier you make it for a reporter, the more likely they are to use it because they're overworked and underpaid like the rest of us. Networking. We always stay at the convention hotel if we can, if we can book it early enough, because you never know who you're going to run into in the elevator or the hallway, or the bar or the lobby. Use social media to connect with people who are attending. Use Facebook events, LinkedIn events, and Twitter hashtags. Attend parties, tweet up lunches and dinners. There are companies that don't have booths at these places, but they just show up for the parties and they schedule lunches and dinners with their clients, and they do very well at trade shows without even maybe without even showing up on the convention floor, you know, but they do a great job with that. Wear your badge, logo, corporate pin, or some kind of ID even after you leave. You know, if you're going to the hotel bar or whatever, you know, it's a good way to strike up conversations with people. I know it seems a little nerdy, but it works. Facebook events. This is the one for the Schedulers and Dispatchers Conference. I don't know if Mike Wise sees on the phone, but, you know, they did a great job of setting this up. The neat thing about Facebook events is you can see who's going, who's been maybe, you know, that they're maybe going and who's invited. So you can see which of your friends are going. You can plan to have coffee with them and those kinds of things. You can also write in here if you've got something special going on, you know, come by our booth for a demonstration of this product or, you know, whatever you want to do. Take advantage of these social media venues. Twitter hashtags. These are hashtags about the Schedulers and Dispatchers Conference as well. Anything that you're posting that may be relevant, you want to put those in into Twitter. Tweeting during the show, you can tweet about, you know, if you've got a contest going on and you're going to be announcing the results in 30 minutes, Twitter's a good way to get people to your booth in at a particular time because a lot of people are carrying their smartphones around. If they set up a notification about the show, and so you can beep everybody's cell phone within 100 yards if they're all set up with the notification.
In fact, some of the trade shows have a large screen television with current Twitter feed going through it.
Exactly. I think all of them should you know, have a big screen TV with the Twitter feed about the show because it really shows what's going on and, you know, helps people participate in crowdsourcing information about the show. Tchotchkes. A lot of people go to shows just for the tchotchkes, it seems like. Are they worth it? What's your thoughts, John?
Only if they're relevant to the product or service that you have. Other than that, I think it's probably not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Because of exactly what you said. I mean, a lot of people run around and they would collect stuff even from us, even though it had nothing to do. They want a scratch pad or a pen or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to show you my favorite tchotchke. This is from Mike Ficklin. You can see it says Flight Explorer on it. And he has a technology product, so this is relevant. It has a logo on it, and it's something that I keep on my desk. So if anybody comes into my office, they're going to see this connected to my computer. This is a hub extender, a USB hub. So, you know, everybody has more USB things than they have USB ports. So, you know, this one I think is a good example because it is relevant, it's visible. You know, they get more than their money's worth, hopefully, in terms of exposure out of this and visibility. If they hand these to the right people and have them on everybody's desk that they want to influence, it keeps their logo right in front of people. So that's a good example of a tchotchke. I would say for bad examples, I've got my whole pen cup behind me over here. I have this pen cup the size of a barrel, and it is full of pens that light up, or pens that have highlighters on them, or pens that do interesting things, and they just sit there. You know, I mean, I don't want to throw them away, but, you know, I have more pens than I can use already, and, you know, everybody is kind of personal about their pen. You know, they have one that they really like to write with, and anything else that you give them is not likely to be used, and it's likely to get thrown into a pile. So any other thoughts on tchotchke?
Nope, I think that covers it.
Okay. There's good, there's bad, and there's ugly. Tchotchke, but you know, the main thing here is just don't go crazy spending money on something that that isn't going to be helpful. Okay, make sure that your tchotchkes are tied to your marketing message, you know, whatever it is that you use. Here we use playing cards for that show that we mentioned before. And we've used those at more than one show because they worked really well. But we tie them in with don't gamble with information assurance. We've also used them with don't gamble with marketing.
I don't have a picture up here yet.
Go ahead.
There's not a picture up here yet.
There's not a picture up here yet. Okay, I see a picture, but I'm missing your picture. Are we having technical issues?
Yeah, we might.
Okay. Let me change it and see if that helps.
No, it's just go on.
It's up on my screen.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you for the feedback. So we know we're all right. Okay. You want them to be unusual and attention-getting. You know, pens or not. I think this USB extender is new enough that it's probably a great one for now. If everybody starts doing it, it's probably not a great idea. The generic tchotchkes are just not worth the money. So we've used playing cards for ours, and we tie it in with the message, you know, don't gamble with information assurance or don't gamble with your marketing. And that's worked really well for us because it really kind of is a memory device which makes people remember, oh, yeah, I remember those folks had the magician at their booth. Don't gamble with your information assurance. You know, I remember the message. I remember what I learned. And I remember why I wanted to contact them later, hopefully. So that's a useful thing. Did anybody comment on those after the fact when we did that for your client, John?
Actually, a lot of folks did. I bumped into quite a few people later on that thought it was an outstanding device.
So it's something that stuck in their mind, you know, connected to your company, which is really what you want to do. Did they remember you after the show? Remember, that was our third criteria there. Okay, and you want them to be unusual and attention-getting. And, you know, if everybody is doing pens that year, you want yours, you know, whatever it is that you're doing to be as different from pens as you possibly can, or vice versa. You know, if it's USB drives, if it, you know, whatever it is, you want yours to be very different. And one of the things that Showalter Flying Service did one year is they had, there was a nail polish, and the name of the color was My Private Jet. And, you know, they were handing that out at their booth. And by the third day of NBAA, all of the women at the convention had their nails the same color. So, I mean, talk about unusual, you know, and really, really creative. I think that was a good one. Are there any others that you remember, John, that stuck out in your head?
No, not really. I mean, not as far as stuff that's handed out.
Okay. Yeah, but if you don't remember it, it probably didn't work. So we'll just leave that as it is. After the show, you want to send a personalized postcard immediately. You know, we like to send them with a picture so that they remember who they talked to. If you send a picture of your booth, you know, or a picture of yourself, you know, whatever it is, so that they remember, oh, yeah, I talked to that guy and I need to talk to him again about this topic. So, you know, it just makes that personal connection. You can also research and connect with people on LinkedIn. Other social media is good, but LinkedIn, we found, is really used a lot in the aviation industry. So that's a great place to stay connected with people after the show. 30 days after, you can do phone calls, information packages. And what do we mean by information packages? We like to put a box together just so it sticks out in their mail. And you can do these flat rate boxes that don't cost a whole lot, but you can include a personalized letter, audio or video on CD or DVD, business brochures and product sheets, books, if you have books on the topic that you're writing about, articles and other kinds of things. And the cost of that really depends on, you know, how qualified is this prospect. Now, if it's a big fish and it's one of your top 10 that you've been after for a while, then you can spend a little bit more money here and have it really be worth your while. Ninety days after the show, you want to make sure that they're still getting your print or email newsletter. We like to have people get something in writing every 90 days or something printed every 90 days. Do you have any thoughts on that, John? Do you prefer mail or email?
Paper.
Paper?
I get too much junk.
Too much junk paper or too much junk email?
Email. Paper.
Okay.
Quality paper.
Okay. And you want to reconnect on social media. We try to reconnect with everyone at least 90 days. If you've got a list of people on your hot list or on your top 10 list, you want to make sure that you have a look at their profile, see what's going on with them, see if they've been promoted or, you know, what's going on in their life. You really want to keep up on those things and stay connected and comment when it's appropriate. This is a timeline that we've used for NBAA, which is a big show that we do for a lot of clients. And you can see it starts in May and ends in April. And the show, of course, is in October. So, you know, and I don't know if these dates are exactly correct, but you get the idea. You know, you start with emails and planning your show and other kinds of things long before the show. And then at least 90 days afterwards and even further than that, you want to make sure that you're staying connected with people. So trade show checklist, you want to make sure that you research your demographics to decide whether a trade show is a good marketing investment. Decide which of those trade shows, of those 200 and some odd trade shows, is the best fit for you. Set a measurable, reasonable objective. You want to plan a campaign to attract the right people to your booth. Design and reserve your booth. Plan to get visitors involved with your product or service. Determine whether to hire booth talent. We talked about magicians, balloon artists, sketch artists, you know, all kinds of crazy things like that. Plan to get permission to contact visitors later. You know, again, you want to set some kind of an appointment if you possibly can. Consider speaking opportunities. Consider press releases. Plan networking activities. Create a great follow-up plan. Create an FAQ and schedule training for your staff to make sure everybody who's inhabiting your booth is, you know, well aware of the differences between your products and your competitors and is educated about those kinds of things. And we'll be able to answer questions confidently and have a great show. And then you want to execute your follow-up plan after the show. All right, so show your work challenge this month. Send us your trade show plan, and we'll give you some personalized feedback on that. And also, we will send you a free gift, which is actually a book on trade shows. We haven't decided which one yet, but it'll be a good one. And make sure you fill out the survey and send it to us, fax or snail mail, and we'll send you a free gift with next month's lesson. Next month, in February, defeating sales phobia. Do you find yourself making excuses for not making sales calls? I do. I don't know anybody on the planet that does not find excuses for not making sales calls. You know, and some of the ways that we'll talk about doing that is positioning yourself as a problem solver rather than a salesperson. Ways to get yourself motivated to stop procrastinating and actually pick up the phone even when it seems like it weighs 10,000 pounds. And in-person sales presentations, getting your point across without being pushy. So make sure you join us for the February session. I think we could all use that. And we'll talk to you then.